All right, law students, ready for a deep dive?
Let's do it.
Today we're tackling property law, and wow, this case is a real head-scratcher. We're looking at Pisern v. Sylvester, a 1979 Rhode Island Supreme Court decision that really flips the script on what it means to own a home.
You hit the nail on the head. You know, a lot of people think living somewhere for a long time equals automatic ownership, but this case throws a wrench in that, especially when you bring unpaid taxes into the equation.
Yeah, it's a total legal thriller in the making. So picture this. The Sylvester family buys their dream home in Cranston, Rhode Island, back in 1951.
The American dream.
Right, fast forward to 1960. The city holds a tax sale, and boom, the Sylvester's home is sold to a guy named Pisern because they missed some tax payments. And get this, they had absolutely no idea.
Talk about a rude awakening. Here's where it gets really fascinating. The Sylvesters, they kept living in the house for over a decade after that sale, totally oblivious to the fact that on paper, it belonged to someone else. They even made improvements. New windows, stairs, fresh paint, you know, the kind of stuff that usually screams, this is my house.
It's like they're building a case they don't even know they're in, right? And that's not all. Is that things get even more intense in 1971?
Oh, yeah. In October 1971, Pisern finally files a foreclosure petition. It's like he's saying, okay, time's up. Let's settle this ownership thing once and for all.
So you've got Pisern holding that tax sale deed like it's the winning lottery ticket. And the Sylvesters claiming they've earned ownership through years of living there and making those improvements. It's a real legal showdown. I can practically hear the lawyers prepping their arguments. So where do we go from here?
Well, this case goes way beyond just who lived, where it delves into two powerful legal concepts, the rights you get from a tax sale versus the possibility of gaining ownership just by living on a property for an extended period, adverse possession. And as this case went through the courts, it really pushed the boundaries of both.
So tell me more about this legal battle. Who threw the first punch?
Round one went to Pisern. The Superior Court initially ruled against the Sylvesters, saying adverse possession doesn't fly in tax foreclosure cases. Seemed like a pretty clear-cut victory.
But wait, there's more. This is Supreme Court territory, right?
You got the case gets appealed to the Rhode Island Supreme Court, and they decide to hit pause on the lower court's ruling. They basically said, hold on, let's hear what the Sylvesters have to say. Give them a chance to present their case for adverse possession. So back to the Superior Court for round two.
Right, round two. Did the Sylvesters manage to flip the script?
They did. A new judge heard all the evidence and ruled in their favor, saying they did acquire ownership through adverse possession. What a plot twist. It looked like the Sylvesters might actually pull this off.
This wouldn't be a very interesting deep dive if it ended there, would it?
You're absolutely right, Pisern. He wasn't throwing in the towel. He appealed again, sending the case back to the Supreme Court for the final showdown. And spoiler alert, the Supreme Court reversed the lower court's decision, siding with Pisern in the end.
Wow, talk about a legal roller coaster. But why did the Supreme Court ultimately rule against the Sylvesters?
To answer that, we need to unpack this whole concept of adverse possession.
Okay, so let's break it down. Adverse possession. What are the key ingredients and how do they apply to this case?
All right, so there are six crucial elements you need to prove to win an adverse possession claim. You gotta nail every single one.
Hit me with them. And for those of us who aren't lawyers yet, keep it nice and clear.
You need actual possession, meaning you're physically living on the property. Then there's open and notorious use. You're not hiding. It's obvious you're acting like the owner next hostile claim. You're occupying the property directly against the actual owner's rights. Then we've got continuous possession. You're there consistently, no big gaps, and exclusive possession. You're not sharing the property with the real owner or anyone else. And finally, the big one, you need to prove this has been going on for a specific duration, 10 years.
10 years, you're saying you can potentially claim ownership of someone else's property just by squatting there for a decade.
Well, it's not quite that simple. Remember, all six elements have to be there. And in this case, that hostile element, that's where things get really interesting, especially when you throw a tax sale into the mix.
I have a feeling those Rhode Island tax laws are about to take center stage. This is getting good. Let's take a closer look at how hostility plays out in Pisern v. Sylvester.
Right. Those tax laws, they really shake things up. Remember, the Sylvesters had that one-year redemption period after the tax sale.
Right. They had until May 25, 1961, to pay the back taxes and get their home back.
Exactly. Well, under Rhode Island law during that time, Pisern couldn't just kick them out. Their possession was considered permissive. So even though Pisern technically owned the house, the Sylvesters were legally allowed to stay there.
Ah, so their initial occupancy wasn't hostile because Bassern couldn't legally enforce his ownership until after that redemption period ended.
Exactly. And that's where the timeline really comes back to bite them. Remember those home improvements they made to prove they were acting like the owner? Well, the earliest ones date back to 1964.
So even though they lived there for over a decade, those first 3 years don't count towards the 10 years of hostile possession needed for adverse possession.
Unfortunately for the Sylvesters, that's correct. And that's what makes this case so interesting. It shows how tax sales create unique challenges for adverse possession claims.
It seems like the court really drew a line in the sand. Were they just being sticklers for the rules, or was there a deeper philosophy at play?
That's a great question. To understand the court's thinking, we need to look at Justice Kelleher. He wrote a powerful opinion in this case.
Okay, Justice Kelleher, what was his take on this whole adverse possession issue?
Well, Justice Kelleher believed in a strict interpretation when it came to adverse possession, especially in cases involving tax sales. He argued that the law wasn't designed to reward people for essentially hiding the true ownership situation from the rightful owner. He really emphasized the need for clear and convincing evidence to prove that possession was truly hostile and not just a result of being allowed to stay there.
So just living in the house wasn't enough for the Sylvestres. They needed to take more concrete actions to show they were claiming ownership against Passern. I'm starting to see why just living somewhere doesn't always mean you own it.
Precisely, and this is where the court's focus on overt acts comes into play.
Okay, overt acts. What kind of actions are we talking about? We mentioned no trespassing signs earlier. Could something like that have helped the Sylvestres?
That's an interesting question. Remember, the court wanted to see clear actions that would have put Passern on notice that his ownership was being challenged. A no trespassing sign, especially one put up right after the tax sale, definitely sends a stronger message than just quietly living in the house. It's like saying, "Hey, this is my turf now."
But would a sign alone have been enough? It seems like a pretty subtle move.
It might not have been enough on its own. The court might have wanted to see more substantial actions like those home improvements, but done much earlier.
Remember, timing is crucial in adverse possession cases. The sooner you start asserting your claim, the better.
So if the Sylvesters had started making those improvements right after the redemption period ended, say in 1962, instead of waiting until 1964, that could have made their case stronger. Absolutely. It's all about building a timeline of actions that show a consistent and clear claim of ownership. In the court's view, a pattern of behavior speaks volumes.
It's like they needed to create a paper trail of hostility, showing they were actively and continuously challenging Passern's ownership. I'm starting to see how this all comes together.
Exactly. And this is where the difference between general adverse possession and cases with tax sales becomes so important. In a typical case, if you're living openly on land, hostility can often be assumed from your presence. But when there's a tax sale, your initial possession is often seen as permissive, at least during that redemption period. So you need to take extra steps to make that possession go from lawful to adverse, legally speaking.
Okay, so you're saying the Sylvester's case was a bit of a legal tightrope walk because they had to go from permissive to hostile occupancy, and they didn't make that transition clear enough for the court.
You got it. And to show what we mean by hostility, let's look at some real-world examples beyond no trespassing signs. What if the Sylvesters had changed the locks right after that redemption period ended, or maybe filed their own property tax forms, claiming the house as their own? Those actions would send a much stronger message of hostile intent.
Those are great examples. They really show what the court was looking for. Actions that go beyond just living there and clearly tell the rightful owner that their ownership is being challenged.
Exactly. It's about showing a clear intention to claim the property as your own, not just passively living in it.
This deep dive is really showing how complex adverse possession can be. It's not just about squatting for a certain amount of time. It's about understanding the legal rules, the ins and outs of tax sales, and the strategic moves you need to build a strong case.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, Passern v. Sylvester wasn't just a legal fight about property rights. It was also a story about real people stuck in a difficult situation.
You're right. There's a human side to this case that we can't forget. I can only imagine how tough this whole thing must have been for the Sylvester family living in that house for 20 years, raising their kids there, only to have it all taken away because of a tax sale they didn't even know about. Reminds us that the law, while important, doesn't always reflect the complexities of real life.
Absolutely. And it raises questions about how our legal system can better protect people from unexpected outcomes like this.
I agree with you on that. But before we go too far down that road, let's get back to the legal lessons from this case. I'm sure our law student listeners are wondering how this applies to their future careers. What are the big takeaways they should get from Passern v. Sylvester? All right, so we've gone through the timeline, the legal arguments, and the real-life impact of this case. But what does it all mean for our listeners, especially those future lawyers out there getting ready for their careers?
I think Basern v. Sylvester is a huge wake-up call that adverse possession isn't some easy way to get free real estate. There's a lot more to it than just setting up camp on a property for a few years and saying, "Mine now."
Yeah, it definitely debunks that myth of squatters' rights being a quick and easy path to owning a place.
For sure, this case really shows how important it is to understand those six key elements: actual, open, notorious, hostile, continuous, and exclusive possession for that critical 10-year period. And as we saw, proving hostility can get really tricky when you've got tax sales involved.
It's a legal puzzle, right? You have to
Yeah.
put all the pieces together perfectly, and timing is everything.
You nailed it, and that's where good legal advice comes in. Pacern v. Sylvester highlights why it's so important to talk to a lawyer early on, especially when you're dealing with property disputes. A lawyer can help you navigate the complexities of adverse possession, understand the specific rules in your area, and build a solid case whether you're trying to gain ownership or defend against someone else's claim.
So to all those future lawyers listening, take note. Property law can be a minefield, and having a good guide can make all the difference.
Definitely. And for anyone who owns a home or is thinking about buying one, Pacern v. Sylvester teaches a crucial lesson. Pay attention to those property taxes. It sounds simple, but as we saw in this case, ignoring those bills can have some serious consequences.
It's like a ticking time bomb waiting to blow up your dreams of homeownership.
Couldn't have said it better. It's a reminder that owning property comes with responsibilities, and staying on top of those taxes is essential.
Okay, before we wrap up, I want to leave our listeners with a final thought-provoking question. We talked about what the Sylvesters could have done differently, but what about Pacern? What could he have done to protect his investment and maybe avoid this whole legal mess?
That's a great question, and it shows how important it is for property owners to be proactive, especially those who buy property through tax sales. Pacern could have checked on the property regularly, looking for any signs of occupancy or changes that might suggest someone was trying to claim adverse possession.
So instead of assuming everything was okay, he should have been more involved keeping a closer eye on things.
Exactly. He could have reached out to the Sylvesters, directly told them about the tax sale, and made it clear that he was the new owner that might have cleared up any confusion and potentially stopped the whole issue from happening. It's about being proactive and vigilant, not just waiting for something to go wrong.
It's a good reminder that property law often involves balancing different interests, and clear communication can really help prevent disputes.
Absolutely. Pacern v. Sylvester offers valuable lessons for both sides, those trying to gain ownership through adverse possession and those protecting their property rights.
Well, folks, there you have it. We've explored the ins and outs of Pacern v. Sylvester, unpacked the complexities of adverse possession, and hopefully given our listeners some valuable insights they can use in their legal careers and as property owners.
It's a case that shows how the law, while based on principles, is always changing, and how seemingly simple things like owning a home can get complicated under certain circumstances.
And with that, we'll wrap up our deep dive into Pacern v. Sylvester. What a ride. It's a reminder that property law is anything but dull. So keep those legal minds sharp, pay attention to those property taxes, and maybe think twice before assuming that living somewhere for a long time automatically makes you the owner. Thanks for joining us.